Thank you for standing by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now for introductions, I'd like to turn the call over to Ms. Billy Galeski. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Stephanie, and welcome to today's Support Technical Exchange. My name is Billy Galeski, and I will be the moderator for this call. This call is being recorded, and within 24 to 48 hours, an MP3 file and presentation will be available on the Support Technical Exchange site so that you may replay it at your convenience. If you've not yet joined the e-meeting, please do so now. The e-meeting URL is available to you from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Today's presenter is Ed Addison. Ed is a senior software engineer working in Raleigh, North Carolina for the KICS Level 2 support team. Prior to working in KICS Level 2, Ed was a member of the VSAM Level 2 support group in San Jose, California. Ed has been with IBM for 18 years supporting VSAM and KICS customers. He's a frequent presenter at the Transaction and Messaging Technical Conference and SHARE. Today's topic is KICS and VSAM performance considerations. The webcast will include a PowerPoint presentation. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, I will ask attendees to participate in a poll where I'll ask a few quick questions. After that, the lines will be open for a question and answer period. If you are in the e-meeting, you will see the presentation now. If you are unable to access the e-meeting at this time, you may obtain the presentation from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site by clicking on the View Presentation link. Or you can go to any IBM.com site and in the search box at the top in the black section, type in this number, 7007625. You will be directed to a page where the presentation is available. Again, that number is 7007625. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Ed.
Thanks, Billy. Good morning, everybody. I'm Ed Addison. As Billy said, I work in CICS Level 2, and before that, I worked in VSAM, so I know a little bit about this area. Page 2, we'll get right into it. I have a disclaimer in the very beginning that the workload was run in a controlled environment. I know that's not how our customers run their workload. I was running on a Z9 model 738 with two CPUs. KICS will put the transaction in FCIO wait each time VSAM issues an IO. This allows the KICS dispatcher to dispatch other transactions. Now, when we're going to go over my workloads, I have some workloads that won't run one transaction at a time. So while CICS is in that FCIO wait, waiting for IO to come back, KICS has nothing else to do, so we're just going to be sitting there waiting. Some workloads have multiple tasks running concurrently, so when you have multiple tasks running, when one task is in an FCIO wait, another task will be able to run. So you'll get, response time would be greater, but you had more tasks running through in that same amount of time, so your response time overall will be, your response time would be greater, but your throughput would be greater also. So we have to keep that in mind as we're going through this. Your VSAM applications are shop dependent. I won't be able to address every possible application design or access to VSAM, such as paths, although I am going to talk about paths and alternate indexes on one of the problems. Different record keys, I used 4-byte keys, record lengths, or batch or transactional VSAM. I won't be able to cover in here. But if we turn the next page to the agenda, what we are going to cover is performance tools that I used. They might vary in your shop, but these are what I used. We're going to talk about non-shared resources, or NSR. We're going to talk about local shared resources, or LSR, shared data tables, how function shipping affects performance. We'll talk about multi-regional operation and the LU62, and we'll talk also about MRO-XCF if you're in a Sysplex coupling facility type environment. And lastly, we'll talk about RLS. Now, what I want to talk about RLS about in the end is if you have RLS in your shop, that's great. It's very much improved since it came out 10 years ago, and we'll see that RLS can actually run better than local in some situations. So if you're thinking about going to RLS, I would recommend it. So if we go to page Or, well, that's just performance tools used, and if we go on to page 5, we'll talk about those performance tools. So the performance data sources I used in CICS, I used KIC statistic records, and I used DFH ZeroStat with those statistic records. The SMF 110 subtype 2 records. They're collected at an interval basis and a day. You get unsolicited statistics every time a file closes or an LSR pool is deleted. You'll get unsolicited statistics out to your statistical data set. Information is similar to RMF data, but it's KICS-based. KICS resource-based also, so files, TSQs, TDQs. We don't do anything that's non-CICS with these. And then I did use KICS monitoring records. These are SMF 110 subtype 1. KICS task level data, performance, and exception. And what I used was DFH file, number of files, gets, puts, adds, browse, and delete requests, FCIO wait time, RLS wait time. You can also get coupling facility data tables wait time, although a little disclaimer there is I did not include coupling facility data tables in this presentation. So if we go to page 6, KICS performance utilities use, I already said I used DFH ZeroStat. You're using QR, TCB, CPU dispatch ratio, transaction rates, and it also reports on many KICS resources besides file control, report on all the KICS resources. KICS Performance Analyzer is the main tool I used. I don't know if everybody has KICS Performance Analyzer in their shop, but I used it and I liked it and I would recommend it. It's a post-processor. Reports generated for the following. You can do CICS monitoring facility data, SMS 110 subtype 1. You can also do statistics with it. You can run your SMF 88 logger records through it, and it will give you a nice logger report. And you can run your 101 DB2 accounting or your WebSphere MQ series accounting. So it will process all of these types of SMF records and give you reports as they relate to CICS. So we're going to go to page 7, and we're going to talk about non-shared resources. And if we go to page 8, we'll start talking. Non-shared resources. Non-shared resources, NSR, allows multiple copies of the same BCM control interval in storage. There's only one string is allowed to update the control interval at any one time. A control interval is, like if you got a 4096 byte control interval and you got 100 byte records, you could fit basically 40 records in that control interval. So only one person is allowed to update that control interval at any one time. So if you had key 1 through key 40 in there and you had two or three people trying to update that any of those records, only one would be able to do it. Other strings are allowed to read copies of the same control interval. But with NSR, only one person is allowed to update the control interval. Other strings are allowed to read copies of the same control interval. Data and index buffers are defined on the RDO FCT entry. The minimum number of index buffers KICS will allow is the string number. So if you say I got 10 strings, the minimum number of index buffers you can have is 10. We won't let you change that below that. Minimum number of data buffers is string number plus 1. The extra data buffer is reserved for control interval splits. And any extra data buffers are used for sequential processing read ahead. This is what you'd want NSR for. It's very important that if you are doing sequential processing in CICS, which is a start browse, read next operation, or a mass insert operation, which is also a sequential add, then you would want to use NSR, and we'll see that in my pitch. Read-ahead may improve transaction response time. We're going to see that it will improve transaction response time. BCM will chain together data buffers with one I.O. So BCM will bring the next sequential data buffers into storage, decreasing I.O. wait time. So basically what they're saying is BCM saying you're being a good model citizen, you're doing sequential processing. When I go do I.O., if you have extra data buffers, I won't just bring in the next control interval. I'll bring in X amount of control intervals. And I think I saw, with the amount of data buffers I had, it would bring in like anywhere from 25 control intervals. So that saved you 25 IOs right there, because you're reading sequentially. You don't have to go do an IO. And then when you get to the end of that 25, it'll bring in 25 more. So, very good. Well, on page 9, I got a little chart here that would be nice for you to see. It's NSR buffering for concurrent access. And what this shows is, if you look at the right-hand side where it says user A has, so user A has and user B wants on the left-hand side. So if user A has shared control of the buffer, then user B wants exclusive control of the buffer, saying it wants to write. In NSR, user B will get a second copy of the buffer. Okay, and if user B has shared, or user A has shared, and user B wants shared, again, user B will get a second copy of the buffer. Okay, not the same copy, a second copy. Now, if user, the only way you're going to get an exclusive control conflict, which says you can't do what you're asking to do, is when user A has exclusive control and user B wants exclusive control. So user A wants to write to that buffer, and user B also wants to write to that buffer, then you'll get an exclusive control conflict. And CICS handles that. It's nothing you have to worry about. But the point that you really want to make here is that NSR has more read integrity issues. While one task is writing to that buffer, hundreds of other tasks can be reading the same buffer, their own, and not getting the updates that task one, who is writing, has just updated. So one thing to keep in mind with non-shared resources is it's more prevalent to what we call dirty reads than local shared resources, which we'll talk about in a little while. Okay, so that was, and I see I'm back in the meeting. I hope everybody else is, and I'll wait to catch up. That was page 9, and we'll be going on to page 10 in a second. All right, this was my workload for NSR. I recreated all of these workloads. I didn't take anybody else's workload. Well, I did take somebody else's workload, and I see that person is on the meeting right now, Mr. Einhorn from ADP, for one of my RLS ones, and I'm sure he'll remember very well the problems we had with that. All the other workloads I did create myself. I didn't go to Hersley Lab and say, what have you found? I made sure I ran them, wrote them and ran them personally. My workload for NSR had a data control interval size of 4096 bytes, a fixed record size of 500 bytes, so I could fit 8 records into each control interval. I had a 4-byte key, by the way. I didn't put that in there, but I had a 4-byte key, if that matters to anybody. So there's 100,000 records in this data set. So there's, and 100,000 divided by 8, I had 12,500 control intervals for the record. Okay? My workload attributes was read the entire data set from beginning to end. Read all 100,000 records. And I know that's kind of sounds like batch work, but I know a lot of customers do that. They process every record in a data set, and that's what I did with this. So I used sequential processing with various data and index buffers, and I also did sequential processing with concurrent access. But I had to take some of that out for this pitch, but we'll talk about it. And I also tried direct processing. Remember, NSR is good for sequential processing, and we'll see that it's not very good for direct processing. And the performance tool I used was Kix Performance Analyzer. So if we go to page 11, this is my transaction. It's called RMIL. It reads sequentially the entire 100,000 records. It does an exec kick start browse followed by 100,000 exec kicks read next commands. And what I did was, remember I said the minimum amount of data buffers and index buffers. So I just took the default with one string, so I got 2 data and 1 index buffer. That's all I had on this particular run. And if you can see, what we're really going to look at is response time and FC weight count. This is a Kix Performance Analyzer report, and you can see I ran it three times. RMILs there three times. My response time was 5.2660 seconds with 12,500 file control weight counts. And you can see it varied a little bit. One was 5.0928 and so forth. But I had 12,500 file control weight counts with the minimum buffers supplied. So there was actually no read-ahead processing with the default data buffers. Okay, so if we go to the next page, it's all I got. Go to page 12. This is a what we're going to look at is a little bar chart, and I'm going to continue to update this. So my total I/O for two data buffers and one index buffer was 12,500, and my response time averaged 5.1319 seconds to read those 100,000 records. Okay, now you got to realize now to get again, this is one transaction running, so there was nothing for CICS to do while that transaction was in an FCIO weight. And 12,500 IOs is a long time. I don't know how, it's probably even faster now, or even worse now, but back when I used to work BSAM, the analogy was when you go out to do an IO to a DASD, back in those days, 3390 non-shark, it was like you went to the store to get ice cream and came back 7 years later. That's how long it takes for the CPU to wait in CPU life for that I.O. to come back. So I.O. takes a long time, and it's a long time to wait. So if we go to page 13, we'll try to make that a little better for you. So page 13 is when I ran the application a second time, still RMIL transaction, read sequentially 100,000 records, but I increased the data buffers to 5. And remember when I said when you have more data buffers for non-shared resources, what VSAM will do will chain together the IOs. So now I have 4 extra data buffers, or 3 extra data buffers to do this IO. So you can see my RMIL transaction. Now the response time is averaging 2.3 seconds just by adding those buffers. So it was over 5 seconds. It went down to 2.3 seconds. And you can see my file control weight count went from 12,500 down to almost 6,200, 6,177, 6,180. So just by increasing a few buffers, right, I took my response time, cut it in half, and cut my file control weight count in half because now VSAN is reading those extra data control intervals in, and I don't have to do an I/O every time I go get the next record in the next control interval. So, like I said, just adding 3 data buffers was successful. So if we go to page 14, just to get you used to my little charts here, we can see the old 2 data buffers, 1 index buffer, and now if you put in the new 5 data buffers, 1 index buffer for total I/O and response time, you can see it cut it in half. Very good story for non-shared resources and sequential processing. So if we go to page 15, I just added more. So this is my total runs. And you can see with 10 data buffers and 1 index buffer, my total I/O went down to 2496. And if you get to the very end there for total I/O, 50 data buffers and 1 index buffer, I got down to 4487 total I/O. I went from 12,500 to 487 IOs, which is just amazing. And if you look at my response time, I went from over 5 seconds to 0.627 seconds, which is also very amazing just by adding data buffers. Now, thing you have to consider is, you know, each data buffer is going to take, we said it was 4096 bytes. So the difference between like the 20 data buffers and 50 data buffers is going to be 30, 4096 byte buffers. But in these days, storage isn't really that much of a problem, but you do have to take that into account. And one thing I also wanted to point out on this slide is you can see I did 20 data buffers, 1 index buffer on the total I/O, and then I did 20 data buffers, 5 index buffers on the total I/O, and it remained the same at 1250. Okay. what I want to point out there is there's no decrease when adding index buffers. vSAN gets to the next control interval by going through horizontal pointers in their sequence set records, rather than vertical pointers in the index set. So they're going horizontally. It's sequential, so they can go horizontally instead of direct. So they're going horizontally instead of top down. And we'll see the difference there when we talk about LSR, when we get to there. So if we go to the next page, which is page 16, wait for it to completely paint. Now, what I want to show you here is NSR direct processing. Remember, we were doing sequential, and sequential, if you're doing sequential and non-shared resources, is very good, but try to take that to direct. So what I did was run an RDIR transaction that directly reads 100,000 records. Now, actually, I did them in sequential order, but I told vSAM, this is direct. We didn't have the sequential bit on when we built the request parameter list to send it over to vSAM. So it's actually a direct request, even though the keys I were asking for were in sequential order. So I read the entire data set with just an exec kicks read, string number on the file set to 5 with 20 data and 5 index buffers, and the transactions were submitted non-concurrent, which means I only submitted one transaction. And you can see that my response time went to 86 seconds over a minute to do the same workload directly than sequentially. Very huge. And you can see my FCIO wait count went to 100,000. So I had to do 100,000 file control waits and got a response time of 86 seconds. So my response time went from 0.8618 seconds to 86 seconds with the same amount of buffers, and my FCIO waits went from 1,250 to 100,000. Kix had to reestablish the string sent to vSAM in every request because it's a direct request, right? We don't know what you're going to ask for next, whereas a sequential request, when you're doing a start browse read next, we know, CICS knows you're going to get, we're going to go for the next record, and we keep that string active in vSAM, or vSAM keeps it active because we got the sequential bit on. When you do a direct, we just tell them, vSAN, give us this record. vSAN gives it to us. They tear down any control blocks they have, or they don't throw them away, but they tear down any pointers that they have to say, we know this guy's going to come back for the next sequential record. But with direct, they don't know that, so they just get rid of the pointers, and we have to reestablish every time. So NSR is not good for direct processing. So if we go to the next page, 17, so NSR sequential processing with non-concurrent and concurrent transaction observations. This is my observations. For a non-concurrent transaction, so one transaction at a time, physical I/O to DASY and response time decreased as the data buffers increased. This is due to vSAM invoking read-ahead logic for sequential non-shared resource access. It requires tuning to find the exact number of data buffers that help read-ahead processing without taking up storage resources. So, again, you just don't want to willy-nilly throw 1,000 buffers at it because you might get the same response with 30 buffers. So it's nice to do a little bit of, you know, running that performance analyzer report or looking at stats and stuff to see if you're getting good read-ahead processing. Increase of index buffers has no effect on response time. And like I said, during sequential processing, vSAM gets to the next control interval by using the horizontal pointers in sequence set records and not the vertical pointers in the index set. While the transaction was in the file control I/O wait time, there was nothing else for CICS to dispatch. The wait for I/O to complete is a long time for the KIX dispatcher to be idle. We like to be busy. Concurrent transactions. I did run concurrent transactions, but they are not shown in here due to the length of the pitch, but I do have some information on them. And what I did was run 50 of these transactions at the same time with 500 buffers. Other tasks could be dispatched while transactions are in the FCIO wait. So response time per transaction was up from 2.359 seconds to 21 through 32 seconds, but 50 transactions did complete in 32.6 32.06 seconds, which was a response time, actually, if you take that, 0.6412 per transaction. Okay, so it was actually, the response time per transaction was longer, but like I said, you got 50 of them through quicker. So that's something you have to take into account as well. So if we go on to page 18, we'll go on to the NSR summary. Sequential NSR processing is a good match for workload that consists of start, browse, read, and next activity within CICS. CSAM will also chain IO for mass insert. I didn't do mass insert, but if you're doing mass insert, sequential writes, it's also good. NSR is also good for that. Read ahead processing may decrease as concurrent users increase because you're fighting for the buffers. NSR is not a good match for direct response time of reading 100,000 records with 20 data buffers and 5 index buffers went from 0.8618 seconds to over 86 seconds. Very important. Physical I.O. went from 1250 to 100,000. NSR does not have a concept of data buffer already in storage for direct processing, which LSR does and we'll talk about next. It allows specific tuning of a particular data set. Right, so if you got a data set that you know you're doing sequential processing on, you don't want to share it in an LSR pool, you want to make it non-shared resources. Now, a bad thing is NSR cannot be run with transaction isolation active, and you can look at that info API there, II09208, to get the scoop on that. And read integrity issues are more prevalent with NSR. Okay? And we already discussed that, but read integrity issues are more prevalent. We'll find out why in a little bit. So if we go to page 19, we can see that we're going to talk about local shared resources. If we go to page 20, we'll start talking about local shared resources. All right, LSR provides more efficient use of storage buffers and strings. And these are all shared among the many transactions that could be running against the data set at the same time. Many read or browse transactions can share records in the data and index buffers. Transactions wanting to update the buffers will be put into a file control, exclusive control wait, or an FCXC wait. Only one transaction can update the data index buffers. Transactions wanting to read a record in the data buffer will be put into an FCXC wait. Remember, that's different from NSR. In NSR, they get their own copy of the buffer. Okay? So buffer allocation for LSR. Buffers are defined, again, using RDO, but it's on the LSR pool definition using resource definition online. Buffers are either user-defined or will be determined by KICS. And we're going to take a look at determined by KICS. One word of warning for determined by KICS is, well, a couple of words of warning. One is that we have to go, when you don't define an LSR pool and buffers or strings, in the LSR pool, we have to go out and issue showcats to BSAM for every data set that's in that pool. If you've got 1,000 data sets in that LSR pool, we have to issue 100. We have to issue 1,000 showcats to get control interval size and so forth, number of strings and so forth. And that takes a long time. And especially if any of those data sets are migrated, say you've got 100 that are migrated, you never use, but they're still in the LSR pool, we have to wait for the migration to come through, get them back to DASDE from TAPE, to get that information, so it can take a long time to have CICS do it. Now, a good thing is it is done under the FOTCB and not the QRTCB, so that's an improvement. And another thing is if you have data sets in your JCL and you don't have them defined in RDO, and it is like you got them hard-coded in your JCL, we won't be able to tell that data set's in there, so we won't get the attributes for it. So that's two things bad about not define your own LSR pool. All right, now, but LSR has the concept of a buffer already in storage. It reads and browses will benefit from what is called look-aside processing. BSAM will not issue an I.O. if the buffer is already in storage, unless you have share options 4, which will force an I.O. for read requests. And BSAM will use a LRU, a least recently used algorithm, to bring new buffers into the pool. Well, I think we talk about that in a little bit, but if we go on to page 21, here's the same chart for LSR, and it's a little bit more stringent. Remember, in NSR, people would get their own copies of the buffer. In LSR, if the user A has exclusive control and user B wants exclusive control, they'll get an exclusive control conflict. And that's the only one in NSR that got an exclusive control conflict. if user A has exclusive control, like he's writing to it, and user B wants shared, like he wants to browse or read it, user B will get an exclusive control conflict. Okay, remember in NSR, he got his own copy of the buffer. The only way you're going to share with LSR, even though it's local shared resources, is if you have shared, if you're in there reading or browsing, and user B wants to read or browse, then you'll share it. And we're going to see the benefits of that. Okay. So if we go to, one thing I want to mention on that page is that this is less prevalent to these dirty reads because the user is going to be queued until the update's done, and then he's sharing one buffer instead of getting his own, so he'll get the updated record. So the read integrity problems are not as prevalent. So if we go to the next page, which is 22, this is my workload for LSR, same data set, basically. Again, 108 records per control interval, 100,000 records in the data set. Read the entire data set from beginning to end. We're going to try it sequentially, and we're going to try it direct. And the performance tools I used on this was the CICS Performance Analyzer and the STAT transaction, which uses program DFA0 STAT. All right, so if we go to the next page, 23, this is the same RDIR transaction that read the entire 100,000 records directly, and with the default Kix build LSR pool. So this is the one Kix build. I like Kix build, and all it had was three data and four index buffers. The same workload in non-shared resources, remember, had a response time of over 86 seconds, and in LSR it was 5 seconds. A big improvement just using the default index and data buffers. The same workload in NSR had 100,000 IOs per transaction. This is what we're calling look-aside here. VSIM invoked look-aside processing since requests were already in buffers, and our data buffer look-aside was 87.4%. So 87.4% of the time we needed a data buffer, it was already in storage, which is a look-aside, so that's good. And our index buffer look-aside was great. It was at 99.9%. Every time we needed an index buffer, it was in storage. So if we go to page 24, this is my DFA0 stat output, and you can see my successful look-asides was 1,149,719. And one thing I want you to realize also, that when Kix figures out your needed buffers, we do not separate the index from the data buffers. When you define an LSR pool to Kix, you can say, I want this many data and this many index buffers. If you let us do it, we just bunch them all together so the data and index are competing for the same buffers. You really don't want that as well. You want your data buffers to be separate from your index buffers. So we can see down at the bottom there, my index buffers were 2048 and my data buffers were 4096 and the numbers were 4 and 3. And we can see that we had 799,719 look-asides for the index. Now you're probably asking, you know, you only did 100,000 or you only did 400,000 reads, so I did it four times. How'd you get 799,000? Well, when you go vertically through the data set instead of horizontally, there's two levels of index. So it took two buffer reads for every request, and every time that we had those two levels of index in there, which was 99.9% of the time, that's why you can get more look-asides than you actually did reads for LSR. But we had 350,000 look-asides for the data buffers, which said 350,000 times for this direct workload, we didn't have to go do an IO, which is a good story. All right, so if we go to page 25, here's LSR workload 2, and what I did here was increase the I built my own LSR pool, 50 data buffers and 10 index buffers, and we can see my response time was 4.4343 seconds. My file control IO wait count was 12,571. Okay, so compared to same workload now in NSR had a response time of 0.627 seconds. So this is my sequential read through LSR. So it wasn't as drastic as trying to do direct in NSR, right? The direct in NSR took 86 seconds, and the sequential in LSR took over 4 seconds, so it's not as drastic. So the point I want to make on this boil is that if you have a mixed workload, you're doing some start, browse, read, and acts, you're doing some direct reads, then you probably want to look to LSR for that because it doesn't have as negative effect if you're doing direct processing. VSIM invoked look-aside processing since requests were already in buffers. Data buffer look-aside was 0%, and we're going to talk about that on the next boil. Index buffer look-aside was still at 99.4. So if we go to page 26, the reason you got a 0 was at the very bottom, that note down there. VSIM does not count a sequential read, so you're reading sequentially. That is in a data buffer as a look-aside hit, even though they didn't have to go pull it in, they don't count it as a look-aside hit. This is due to the fact that the string was positioned in the data buffer and there was no need to find the record. Also note there is 12,500 I.O. per run, 50,001 times 4 runs. This will never decrease in LSR sequential processing for this single transaction. So you can see you had look-asides of 0 for this, and that's the way we're just pulling this stat directly from VSAM, and that's the way to keep it. He said even though we didn't have to go do I.O., it was a sequential request. It was already in the buffer. It's not a look-aside hit. A look-aside hit is if we're going down vertically through the index and find that that the buffer's there, and it's a direct request, not sequential. All right, if we go to page 27, I wanted to talk about concurrent RDIR transactions here. So this is 50 of the RDIR transactions, which read the entire data set directly. You can see with 3 data buffers and 1 index buffer, my data look-asides was 2,131,619. When I increased it to 1,000 data buffers and 20 index buffers, I got 4.8 million data look-asides, so I went from 42.6% to 97.34%. Now, the point I want to make on this one is the tuning. I gave it 13,000 data buffers and 50 index buffers. And, yes, I got better data look-asides. I went from 97.34 to 99.75. I went from 4.8 million to 4.9 million. Now, the question is 12,000 data buffers worth that 100,000 I.O.? It's something you have to answer in your shop. I just want to let you know, show you that 97.34 is not bad, okay? And to get to 99.75 or higher, you're going to have to throw a lot of data buffers at it, which is a lot of storage we're talking about, right? 12,000 4,000-byte records or 4,000-byte control intervals. So keep that in mind as well. And if we go to page 28, we'll talk about the LSR summary. LSR processing is a good match for your workload that consists of direct reads. Response time for 100,000 direct reads in NSR was over 86 seconds compared to under 5 seconds in LSR. Look-aside processing may increase as concurrent users increase. LSR is not a great match for sequential processing. Response time of reading 100,000 records sequentially with a well-tuned LSR pool was over 4 seconds, while physical I.O. was 12,500. The same workload in NSR had a response of 0.627 with 487 IOs, because VSIM does not chain together IOs for LSR. It'll never happen. LSR can run with transaction isolation active, and read integrity issues are less prevalent with LSR. There's only one copy of a VSIM control interval in storage at any one time. Read requests will wait until update request is finished before gaining access to the records of the control interval, so you don't have the problem of these dirty reads. Okay, so LSR summary is good, is great for direct, is what I want you to get off of that page. So if we go to page 29, continue with our summary. LSR provides the following more efficient use of virtual storage because buffers and strings are shared, right? You could have 1,000 data sets sharing these buffers. Better performance because of buffer look-aside, which can reduce I.O. operations. It's self-tuning. Because more buffers are allocated to busy files and frequently referenced index control intervals are kept in the LSR pool. Remember, VSIM has this least logically used or something to get. If the LSR pool buffers are full and one's not being used and VSIM needs to pull another one in, they'll take the least actively used buffer out. So your busier data sets will keep their buffers in storage. Use of synchronous file requests and a UPAD exit. A UPAD exit is something that vSAN will drive for LSR. Instead of making kicks wait, they'll drive a UPAD exit, and we'll put the task into an FCIO wait and let other tasks go on about their business. So CA and CI splits for LSR files do not cause either the subtask or main task to wait. vSAN will take this UPAD exit while waiting for physical IO and process it continues for other kicks works during the CA-CI split. LSR is susceptible to exclusive control conflicts, and we're going to see that later when we talk about that ADP workload. An update request will receive an exclusive control wait if there is a browser read active in the buffer it wants to update. And a read or browse request will receive an exclusive control wait if there's an update active in the buffer it wants to access. So it's more prevalent to exclusive control conflicts, but less prevalent to read integrity problems. So if we go on to page 30, we're going to talk about shared data tables, and go on to page 31. Here's a little overview of shared data tables. It uses MVS cross-memory services instead of KIX function shipping to share a file between two or more KIX regions in the same MVS image. Very important, same MVS image, although you can use coupling facility data tables within a coupling within a sysplex. So access of records prefer memory instead of DASI. Very large reductions in path length can be achieved because function shipping is avoided. We're going to talk about function shipping in a while. Function shipping has a lot of overhead. Cross-memory services are used so the requests are processed by the AOR, so you can free up the FOR to process other requests. Right, this increases multiprocessor exploitation because you're not driving the FORs only one TCB for this. You're doing it from the QRTCB on the AOR. Any number of files referring to the same data set that are open at the same time can retrieve data from the one KIX maintained data table. Okay, and I got a little blurb about here, increased security. You can read through that. User exit, if you don't want to put all your records in the data table, you can use this user exit XDTRD to skip over a range of records. So if we go to page 32, here's my workload. Same data set. Read it from beginning to end. We're going to try it sequential and direct, and I use KIX Performance Analyzer. Okay, try to keep the data sets for this workload the same, so we'd have something to compare. So if we go on to page 33, here's my shared data table workload. Now this is reading it directly. So I read 100,000 records directly, and we can see that my response time was 0.28 seconds. And, of course, my file control wait count was zero, right? But data tables are great for read and browse activity. I had to do no I.O., and my response time, same workload, we got it right there, same workload in non-shared resources was over 86 seconds, and we went to 0.28. LSR, which is good for direct processing, the best I could get was 4.5 seconds and compared to 0.28. In NSR, we had 100,000 I.O.s. Same workload in LSR had IOs, even with 13,000 data buffers, I had IO. Now, one thing I want you to look is we got a CFTL transaction up there at the top that had a response time of 4.52 seconds, which isn't bad, and it had the file control wait count. What this transaction does is load the data set. When you open a data set that's a data table, we will go read the source vSAN data set and read every record in. So that's what that CFTL transaction does. But once it's done, anytime you want to access it, now you're going to get this 0.28 response time for that 100,000 reads until you close it and reopen it, and would have to reload it again. So if we go to page 34, this is reading it sequentially, which was, you know, a good NSR thing. So again, I'm getting 0.28 response time. Same workload in NSR, when I threw a lot of buffers at it, had 0.627 second response time, and LSR had 4 seconds response time. Again, no IOs for reading or browsing when you're using shared data tables, so the least I could get it down to in NSR was 487, and LSR had 12,500 IO. So shared data tables is a great story if you are doing read in browse, process, and in CICS, you really want to think about making it a data table for response time. Okay, so if we go to the next page, 35, now we'll talk about function shipping. And function shipping, KIX function shipping provides, basically what it provides is both anything you could do to it locally, you can now do it to remotely. So you have an application-owning region issuing the read, and it can go to a file-owning region. So let's go on to page, you can read through that, but let's go on to page 37. Here's some talk about what multi-region operation is. I'm assuming that everybody in here knows CICS pretty well, but if you want to look up what multi-region operation is, or MRO, this is what it is. Basically, it's between CICSs only, and it uses LPA and everything to go make the calls, or it uses the coupling facility if you're doing MRO XCF, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. In page 38 is if you're using LU62 inter-system communications. Mostly it's LU62, and this is set up through a network like VTAN. Okay, but I want to get to the results here, so let's go to page 39. Now, this is a word of caution. Issuing 100,000 file control requests is in the same transaction is more like batch work. This will show a huge difference between local and function shipping. The numbers are included here for reference only. So on the same LPAR, when I used LU62, you can see that my workload was 33.74 seconds response time for their direct 100,000 reads and 17 seconds for the sequential 100,000 reads. Now, when I check that to a separate LPAR, had the AOR in one LPAR and the FOR in the other LPAR, it just increased dramatically because now you're talking, more overhead. So when I used LU62 or a VTAM network, it went from RDIR was 110 seconds. And remember, we got that down to 4 seconds with LSR, and the sequential RMIL was 116 seconds using LU62. And remember, we got that down to 0.8627 seconds or something using NSR. So it's just a word of caution that there is overhead with function shipping. Okay? And we can see here now, one thing I want to throw in here, we're going to talk about RLS in a minute, but we can see that I also ran this with record level sharing, and we can see that response time is 7.93 seconds for the RDIR and 6.34 seconds for the sequential RMIL. So it's a lot better than function shipping. It's more than local, okay, because remember local, we got down to like 4 seconds, 5 seconds, and for the sequential one with NSR, we got down to 0.8 seconds or something like that. But here's a plug RLS here, that it's much better than function shipping. So let's get to the next page, which is page 40. And so what I did here is went to a more reasonable workload for function shipping, DHUN, 100 direct reads against a tuned LSR data set, and SHUN, start browse 100 read next, so sequential. So basically D for direct, S for sequential. And I wanted to give you the local baselines here. So DHUN ran in 0.011 response time and 0.009 CPU time. SHUN ran 0.0065 response and 0.0011 CPU. And these are my concurrent ones too, but we're not going to talk about them too much. So if we go to the next page, page 41, this is function shipping LU62 on a different LPAR. So the SHUN transaction reads sequentially 100 records. Exec kick start browse followed by 100 exec kicks read next, and DHUN transaction that issues 100 direct reads. So DHUN response time went from 0.0011 local to 0.1413. So quite a big jump using LU62 on a different LPAR. CPU on the AOR went from 0.0009 to 0.0050. And that's on the AOR. When you take into account the FOR, it would be that 0.0050 plus the 0.0009. So it actually was 0.0059 for CPU for that. SHUN response time went from 0.0065 local to 0.1399. and CPU went from 0.0011 to 0.0020. So you can see the overhead of function shipping. And I know sometimes you have to function ship, you want to function ship. I'm just letting you know that it does have overhead involved. This has always been a question for me from customers, how much overhead, and that's what we're going to try to answer. So if we go to page 42, I did the same thing, function ship in XCF MRO. So the first one was LU62. Now this is going to, it's in a different LPAR, but it's in the same sysplex, so I used XCF MRO, which will use the coupling facility, and MRO within CICS. So on this one, same shun and dehun. Dehun response time went from 1.1327 using LU62 to, or I'm sorry, went from 1.1327 to 1250 compared to LU62. And CPU went from 0.0050 to 0.0032. So if you have different LPARs for your AOR and your FOR, then you really want to use XCF MRO if they're in the same sysplex and you do have coupling facility. So shun went from 0.1413 to 0.1135, and CPU went from 0.0020 to 0.0028. So a good story for XCF MRO if you're on different LPARs. And if we go to page, the next page, which is 43, I have a chart in here of my dehun and shun for all runs. We can see the blue is LU62, 0.1327. We'll look at dehun first. Then the next one is with XCF MRO, and that's 0.125. And the next one is with XCF MRO with a long-running mirror. And we can see for dehun, that's a little bit better. It's 0.109 because this is a direct request. What MRO long-running mirrors will do for you is keep the mirror around for direct requests. Remember when I said when it's a direct request, BSAM will tear down the environment and say, we're waiting for your next request. Well, with long-running mirrors, instead of also CICS tearing down the CSMI transaction and all of its control blocks and everything, it'll say, oh, you want long-running mirrors? We'll keep this mirror active for this task and wait for it to come back, even though it was a direct request. So you want to use MRO long-running mirrors if you're doing direct requests and going over an AOR to an FOR. So now the 0.0203 is just MRO. So, you know, same LPAR. The first three are different LPARs. The next one is 0.0203 is just using MRO on the same LPAR. AOR and FOR is on the same LPAR. And then, again, MRO long-running mirrors went down to 0.004. For the direct request, you can see that on the FHUN, the sequential one, MRO long-running mirrors doesn't make a difference because since it's sequential, CICS would have always kept that CSMI task around and kept all the control blocks around to satisfy it. Okay, so real quick, let's go over onto page 44. We'll talk about record level sharing. And if we go on to page 45, record level sharing has the following benefits. It does exploit the parallel sysplex, reduces lock contention, locks throughout the sysplex are at a record level, removes the file owning region capacity constraint, so the data set can be opened from 500 data sets on 500 different KIX regions on 500 different AORs, and you don't need an FOR. It improves availability and eliminates the FOR as a single point of failure. An entire data set is not taken offline for a backout failure. That's a big difference. Improves sharing between CICS and batch. You can share a non-recoverable data set through hundreds of CICS regions and hundreds of batch regions. It improves integrity. You got full write integrity through many updaters throughout the sysplex. Full write integrity supplied by BSAM or SMS BSAM, and you also have various forms of read integrity. And it's up to you what forms you have. The default is no read integrity, which is the same thing as basically LSR. And you can also have consistent read integrity that says, don't give me the record back until it's updated. So someone's updating a record, you can say, I'm going to read that record, but don't give it to me until the person that's updated it has sync pointed or terminated and I made sure the update's complete. And there's also one called consistent read explicit that said that you've read the record yourself you don't want anybody to update it until you've seen pointed or terminated, and then they can get it, even though you've only issued a read for it. So it's a very powerful read integrity. So if we go on to page 46, this is, we're going to use the same shun and dehun transactions. So remember S for sequential and D for direct. And we can, now I'm just going to compare RLS to local here. I'm going to give you a comparison from what RLS to local did. And so CPU went from 0.00065 local to 0.0023 using RLS. And we're going to compare it to function shipping on another FOIL. Response time for shun, for the direct one, response time went from 0.0007 to 0.0035. So you can see there is some overhead with RLS compared to local. And from shun, it went from 0.00637 to 0.0020 using RLS. And CPU went from 0.0010 to 0.0016. So actually it was better running shun for response time, but not CPU time. And if we go on to page 47, what I want to show you here, here's a chart that says I'm going to compare MRO long-running mirrors in the same LPAR to RLS to local, right? So RLS beat MRO long-running mirrors in the same LPAR. So AOR and the FOR in the same LPAR, RLS consistently beat that. Of course, it's not going to compare to local, although if you look at the shun transaction, the sequential one, it actually beat, not CPU-wise, but response time, it beat the local workload. And what I did was put a little note at the bottom that MRO-XCF had a response time of 0.1050 for dehun and 0.1022. I couldn't put it on this chart because it would have made these other ones so small, you wouldn't have been able to see them. So it really beats MRO-XCF when MRO-XCF is on a separate LPARs, and it really beats LU-62 when LU-62 is on different or the same LPARs. I just couldn't put it on here because it would have made my chart look silly. Okay, so if we turn the page to 48, this is the CPU that was used. So even though shun had a better response time, it still did have more CPU than local, but it has, again, better response time or better CPU time than MRO long-running mirrors, and it had much better CPU time than MRO XCF or LU62 on different LPARs. All right, if we go to the next one, the next page, which is 49, this is an update workload, so you really want to talk about updating when you talk about record-level sharing. So this was UPDT transaction that issues 1,000 read for update, rewrite commands against a well-tuned data set, and a SUPD exec kick start 50 update transaction. So if I wanted to run concurrently, and I also did CI lock yes and CI lock no. What CI lock yes is, lets VCM lock on the control interval level locally. CI lock equals no mimics record level sharing on a kicks level. So KIX will issue a record lock after the read update to lock other users from updating that particular record. Other transactions can then update records in the same control interval. So it's like RLS for one KIX region. Okay? It's a record lock by CICS. It's not a record lock by DSAM. So if we go to the next page, 50, this is my update chart, and we can see that for response time, local CI lock yes, and local CI lock no was about the same. And record level sharing went from 0.03 or to point from 0.3 to 0.5. So you do have overhead, but we're just comparing it to local. We've always known that local RLS is not going to beat local, but there's always been some questions about how it does against function shipping. So we know it's not going to beat local, but we'll see on the workload where it will in a second. And for the CPU time, we can see CPU time is also more for RLS. So if we go to page 51, this is when they were ran concurrently. I just put that in there for you. So 50 concurrent of those at the same time of those UPDT transactions. And again, we can see RLS is coming in higher than local, which we would expect. But now if you go to the next page, which is 52, RLS update workload 2, this is the one that I talked about that Zalman from ADP gave us. We had a big problem with exclusive control conflicts, locally, though, not with RLS. But while we were having this problem with ADP, I also ran it as RLS. So what they had was a customer workload that reads a record from a KSDS using TRN1 and exec kickstarts TRN2 to write the record to another KSDS. There was 5 alternate indexes above the output KSDS. Input KSDS has 300,000 records for the initial iteration, and I took that down to 14,000 records and 2,200 records, and I used CI lock equals no. So if we go to the next page, we can see that locally, this transaction to run these 300,000 starts that took one record from a data set and wrote it to another one, response time in minutes was 30.01 for local. And for RLS, we can see RLS really did well, 19.25 response time. And even in CPU, it was 428,000 CPU seconds and 279,000 using 5844. And the reason is, for this type of workload, there was a lot of exclusive control conflicts and there was a lot of thrashing. Now, before we put out a fix out there for the traditional BSAM one, get it down to 30.01 seconds. This workload, I let it run for over a week, and it wouldn't complete using local. But we gave them a fix. We put a fix out. It's an old fix, so everybody's got it on. But now it's down to 30.01 seconds, so it's well-tuned. But still, RLS is down. We'll take that down to 19.25. And if we go to the next page, which is page 54, I believe, this is with 14,000 records. So I took it down to, 300,000 is a lot. Let me take it down to 14,000. Response time in minutes, RLS is still very well compared to local. And CPU times, it's still better than local. So here's a situation where RLS, record level sharing, is actually better in response time and CPU time than local. So it depends on your workload is the point I'm trying to make here. And if we go to the next chart, this is with the 2,200 records, and still, RLS is better. So if you're getting a lot of exclusive control conflicts, you're not going to get them with record-level sharing like you will with local. And the problem is the updating of the alternate index. Remember I said we had 5 alternate indexes. So when you update that base record, vSAN has to update that alternate index, and there was 5 of them. If any of them got an exclusive control conflict, you had to back them all out. So there was a lot of processing going on locally that you don't get for RLS. So if we go to our next page, which is page 56, I believe, this is my summary. NSR, great for sequential read-or-write processing, not a good candidate for direct processing at all. LSR is great for direct processing, and it's a good candidate for sequential processing. So remember, if you got a mixture of direct and sequential, you probably want to use LSR as opposed to NSR. Shared data table is the best candidate for read and browse transactions. We saw that. Function ship in LU62 has a high response time. Use XCF MRO instead of LU62 if you're in the same sysplex. It drastically took down the response time. And MRO use if KIX regions are in the same LPAR. Although I do know customers that even they're in the same LPAR, they still use LU62, and I don't understand. I never got a good answer. But you don't want to do that. And you want to use MRO long-running mirrors for direct request applications so that we don't have to tear the transaction down each time and rebuild it. And RLS CPU and response time better than MRO long-running mirrors, even when KIX regions are in different LPAR. So that answers that question about MRO long or RLS versus function shipping. There's always been some confusion thinking it was more, but it is not. It's less CPU and response time than function shipping. And CPU and response time could be even better than local, depending on the workload. So if we go to the next page, I ran a little bit over, but I think it was because of the problems I was having in the very beginning of not seeing the pitch. But that's fine, and I'm going to turn it back over to Billy at this time.
Thanks, Ed, for the great presentation. time, Stephanie, I'd like to open the lines for a question and answer session.
Thank you, ma'am. If you'd like to ask a question at this time, it is star 1 on your touchtone telephone. We ask if you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 on your touchtone telephone. We'll pause just a moment to assemble the queue. Our first question comes from Mike Guiacinto of Wells Fargo.
Hey, Ed, Mike Guiacinto, how are you doing?
Hey, Mike, how have you been?
Great. First, great presentation. I have a question, but I did want to say thank you. You had some really good information here. Contrary to information that I've seen in the past, and it's going to help us in our planning for RLS. So
thank you, Mike.
Yes, very good. R1 stumbling block for some applications, and I know you're not Santa Teresa, but is RLS and Stripe data sets.
Yes.
Any feedback on that, or do you know anything about what's going on there?
Well, from what I hear from Terry, you know Terry Menendez, right, over there in development, she says they're working hard on it. There's nothing, unfortunately, out right now that's going to help you with Stripe data sets and RLS, but they do know the requirement, and if you're waiting for that, I can't pre-release, but I think it's going to be soon that one of the future soon releases of ZOS will have SMS vSAM that's going to help you out with that.
Great. And your findings on the CML bar, that's all great. And vSAM all the indexes, it's going to help us a lot. Thanks very much.
You're welcome, Mike.
By the way, your comment on the ice cream store and 7 years later, I can already see Tom Hanks starring in that movie.
Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Our next question will come from Howard Law of Bank of America.
I have actually got a couple of questions here, three, if you've got time to answer them. The first one was, assuming you have the storage available, is there ever a point when you can have too many LSR buffers? And what I mean by that is, what's the overhead for vSAM to search through very large buffer pools to find the record it's looking for compared to actually doing the I.O.? Or is it always the case that no I.O. is better than some I.O.?
That's a good question. If I think about it, from what I remember from vSAM and when I used to work there, so you're going, if you're doing a direct request, you're always going through vertically through the index. So you're going to eventually get down to, you're going to hopefully always have your index buffers in storage, so you always get that 99.9% index rate for leukocytes. But the way they search through, they have direct pointers down to a control interval, and since it's a greater than or equal to search through their index down to that data control interval, I'm not Santa Teresa, but I don't believe there's much overhead involved in that because they have pointers directly from their sequence set records in their index down to what data control interval it's in, so they don't have to sequentially search data control intervals, in other words. To find the right one.
If the buffer's already in an LSR pool, how does it find which LSR buffer it's in?
Yes.
I guess my question is,
right.
Is by having a huge LSR pool, and you know your record somewhere in there, what's the overhead of finding it within that buffer pool?
Well, what they have is a set of control blocks. They have something called a placeholder that points to a PLH placeholder. That points to whatever BUFC control block it's connected to, and then the BUFC control block actually has a pointer to the actual buffer in storage. So when they do their search, they'll get hooked up to this control block structure. And I see what your point is. How do you know what control block structure it is? But unfortunately, I don't know off the top of my head that they could just go directly to it. But if it's already in storage and it's already being used, it does have this control block structure set up, and I'm sure there's an efficient way for vSAM to find out which control block structure it's hooked up to. I don't think they have to do am I on this one? No. Am I on this one? No.
But you think it's probably always the case that it's better than doing the I.O.?
Oh, yes, yes, much better. Anything you're doing CPU-wise when you have the CPU is much better than going out and doing a physical I.O. to DASI, even with the new devices.
All right. I've got a second and third one, if you've got time for those.
Yes.
One thing I was doing recently, we were trying to consolidate some really busy file learning regions down from 3 FORs down to 2 FORs. We've got a lot of busy files in those. I came across a situation where we're trying to separate or keep certain files away from each other, and it would have been nice to have more LSR pools. You know, you're limited to 8 per region.
Yes.
I noticed under, like, Batch LSR seems to use 16, and a quick bit of research on IMS looked like IMS could use 16. Do you know why Kix only uses 8?
I know why Kix only uses 8, and it was a decision that was made a long time ago,
that you'd never need more than 8, even though there is 16 available, and there is a requirement out there, and if you want to, write me an email with your email, I can give you the requirement number, and I'm also the serviceability rep to Hursley for CICS, and they do know about how customers not only want 16 LSR pools, but you can also, you know, get different buffer sizes, right, than what we allow.
Oh, right,
to
yeah,
build.
We're in 4K and it's in 2K. Or,
right, exactly.
Yeah.
So they are aware of it, but any customer, especially, you know, that is talking about it on this WebSphere Technical Exchange, will just add fuel to it. And if you'd like, I am E. Addison, that's E-A-D-D-I-S-O-N, at us.ibm.com. And I can certainly add your name to the requirement and just give me more ammunition when I go over there for my serviceability reviews and so forth to say customers are really...
Okay.
I was thinking
of putting it through Share as well, but
yeah, Share would be great too because Share has a little bit more weight actually
than the regular requirement database.
Okay.
And I'll be at Share as well, so you can talk to me directly.
I won't be at Share, but I'll submit it through the Share website or something.
Okay, great.
My last question. Let other people get some in. Hyperspace. You didn't mention hyperspace buffers. All the Kix manuals still say, even the 3.1 that we've currently got in, that the hyperspace buffers go to expanded storage,
right,
which doesn't exist anymore under
right.
ZOS. I've read some things that say it now goes above the bar. Do you have any comments on hyperspace? When would you use it if you had sufficient region storage to put your LSR, you know, make your LSR pools big enough?
Right. There's no such thing as expanded storage anymore. You're exactly right.
But I think all the 3.1 manuals still say that's where it goes.
Right. But we do have, in fact, I'm looking at my coworker now who took the hyperspace questions from customers, and I know he's submitted updates to the manuals.
Hyperspace, if it's above the bar, then it's managed by vSAM above the bar. We are tolerant of above the bar, but it would have to be put down into below the bar storage for us to give it to you.
And the only reason you would use them is if you're, you know, you were running out of storage within the region and you couldn't make your LSR pools any bigger?
Right, you'd want to...
Otherwise, you're just moving from one address space to another for no particularly good reason.
That's right. From now on, we'll try to put better documentation in the manuals for it, but
it's kind of losing its luster, I guess I should say.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, thanks. You answered all my questions.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Once again, that is *1 if you'd like to ask a question at this time. It is star followed by the digit 1 for any questions or comments at this time. We have a question from Eugene Hutters of ACT.
Hi, Eugene.
Hi, Ed. Thank you very much for the excellent presentation. I'd like to go back to that question on the size of the LSR pools.
Yes.
I'm not sure I understood it correctly, but I thought that vSAM use the hashing algorithm to locate the actual buffer within the pool, and it didn't really make any difference if you had 1,000 buffers or 10,000 as far as the time to search. If I understood that correctly, is that correct?
Yes, they do use something called a BSPH, a buffer subpool hashing. So, like you said, I imagine it would be a little bit more overhead if you had 1,000 compared to 5, right? But I don't think it's going to be significant overhead because the buffers are hashed, and they should be able to get right to them through their hashing algorithm and say, this is the buffer that I need. So I think you're exactly right that it might be a little bit more path length or instructions
or going through the Hashnell algorithm if you have 1,000 buffers compared to 5, but I think it's insignificant. I think you're exactly right.
Hey, thank you.
And it seems we have no further questions. I'd like to turn the call back over to Ms. Godlewski for any closing remarks or additional comments you may have, ma'am.
Thanks, Stephanie. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information today has been valuable to you, and we really appreciate your participation. Remember, a replay of this presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site within the next couple days. We hope you will join future presentations, which will also be announced on the Support Technical Exchange site. Thank you very much for joining us today, and Ed, thank you very much for presenting. Have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our teleconference for today. We do appreciate your participation. At this time, you may disconnect.